Number one, Star Wars. Number two, comics. Number three, Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit. Number four, Mario. Number five, Weird Al. Number six, Batman. Number seven, Kal-El. Number eight, The Simpsons. Number nine, TV. Number ten, every single band that I stole all their MP3s, but before they all sold out, say it all together if you're with me now. Nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything. Say nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything. Say nerds ruin everything.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Nerds Ruin Everything. I'm Logan.
I'm Adam.
And we're sorry we missed last week, but Adam had COVID.
Yeah, I had a major case of COVID, me and my wife. It's nothing to fuck around with, guys. The surge is back and it's very real. We've had like at least three people that we know went down, and they went down hard, man. Like, not and like.
It sucks because, like, we talk fairly regularly during our text.
Yeah.
And, like, it's not like you're going out to a concert every other night of the week.
No. Like, we zeroed in on where we got it from. Like, you want to know the craziest part? Do you know where we got it from? Fucking Costco.
I mean, yeah.
That's like the only place we went. So I've kind of adopted the whole thing of like, I'm finally over it. I've tested negative twice. So I have masked everywhere I've gone now, like, and shockingly, I'm very surprised at how many people are actually masking right now. Like, it's very shocking to me because I didn't think that people would, but they definitely are.
On the film cast, he doesn't talk about it a lot, but Dave Chen, he brings it up every now and then. Like, he still masks up, like, at the movie theater. Like, when he's out in public, he's wearing a mask. I don't know if the other guys do. I've heard it brought up on over on the Ringer. On the Ringerverse podcast, they talk about, but I think all of those guys now actually do live out in LA. So
I don't know if Joanna is, or if she's making the commute and like basically staying with what's her name? Her partner in crime,
because
I saw something weird where she, like, it was like off season, like back on season, coming back to LA or something like that. But yeah, like, and you see their social media and they're all masking up. So I mean, shit, it got so bad where I'm like, you know what, maybe I might want to buy one of those Dyson Bane masks now at this
point. At least nobody would fuck with you if you're wearing that. Like, I'm just gonna leave that guy alone.
Yeah, he's pretty fucking hardcore, and he can't hear me anyways because he's listening to music. one of my friends actually just bought one. And so I'm very curious. Like, I'm going to actually talk with him. He got it from Amazon. And so, like, I'm actually curious to see what he has to say about it and how it feels, and if it's uncomfortable or not. So I will report back. I'm literally at the point where I'm like, fuck it, I have everything else. I might as well just, like, you never have to reuse again, other than getting a replacement. Like, you know, like, even the filters are not even like, you just, I guess you just pull them out and you like wash them and shit, on that thing. So, but if I do get it, you definitely know I will be telling you, and I will be showing you pictures of and doing my best Bane impersonation.
But it's got to be Bane from Harley Quinn and Kite Man. Yes.
No, I would definitely do that voice. You know, like, you have to, like, you know how like with any impersonation, you have to start with with something that works for you, and then you can go from there. My favorite is my favorite line from him, and it's something that my wife constantly says. Also, because we love Bane, is probably one of my favorite parts from Harley Quinn, is from the Christmas special. God bless you, Harley Quinn.
Yeah, it's like this weird, like, Jimmy Stewart, like, but menacing thing, which is something Jimmy Stewart almost never was. No. Maybe elderly Jimmy Stewart was a little. But yeah, I don't think you haven't had a chance to catch up on Kite Man yet, right?
No, I have not, unfortunately. I keep on seeing people post things on, like, the problem is that I keep on seeing people post shit, like, no context things from that show, And it's making me so mad because all I want to do is like, I'm like, stop it. Stop with the spoilers. Because it's not funny when it's not in context. But then it's like, oh, well, that's great. I don't know anything about this now. It's going to have me ruined. So, but with that, did you have, how is it, by the way? Is it?
I mean, I'm still enjoying it. This last episode, like, I think we talked a couple of weeks ago. I told you about the time travel episode and how, like, fun and inventive and just hilarious that was.
Yes.
And something happens at the end of that episode that kind of changes the dynamic of the show. And they did it intentionally, and, like, I see where they were going, but it hasn't really been fun for me since then. The last two episodes have been a little down. Like, Bane is still great, and, like, all of the outlying characters have been a lot of fun, but Kite Man and Golden Glider have kind of, like, I just haven't enjoyed what's going on with them, and they're the main focus of the show.
They're the of the show, essentially. So,
yeah.
Oh, man, that sucks. I hate when that happens. Like, it's not like it's an ensemble. Like, it is an ensemble, but it isn't. It's like what happened with last season of Harley Quinn. How stuff with Harley and Ivy was just kind of like,
it was so much about them, and like I get it, but also. Really, the show found it, for me, it's like true footing when it was an ensemble, like a true ensemble. And and it just loses something. Like, it's one thing, like, you know, we watch like sitcoms or, you know, modern like The Office or something, which isn't really modern, but
like Brooklyn Nine-Nine. I mean, that's also
yeah.
bit older, but I mean it's like
the or Abbott Elementary.
Oh yeah,
That's a current show. Like, it's fine to have an episode that's just focused this one relationship or this one person, but if like you had six or seven episodes that were like in a row focused about like Janine's relationship with whichever guy, just pick one.
Like, well, let's just say Mr. Eddie.
Yeah.
Like, you know, because that was the main kind of focus this year, personal side of things. But you're
right. But if it's just that for six episodes and everybody else gets like a line, and not even all in the same episode, like you all like Bane is in this episode for a couple of minutes, and then King Shark's in this episode, right? Like it gets frustrating. You split the band up and, you know, like you didn't give them anything else to do. Like it in a show like The Office, when Jim left, it was still about The Office, but also about Jim's new workplace. Like you had enough of that to balance it out, and then you brought it all back together, and the show didn't really do that. I'm worried that Kite Man like may have done something similar, you know, not jump the shark, you know, but
yeah,
it does worry me. Like this last episode really worried me. I was like, oh no, like the only stuff I laughed at in this episode was when neither one of them were there. Like that was,
That's not good. That is not good. It's all, I've been like, I mean, I'm gonna watch it just because it's breezy. It's 22 minutes, you know, but that doesn't bode well for a show that's like literally in season one.
Yeah.
But you know,
it's one like last episode wasn't as bad as this week's episode. It's so I'm gonna say it's just one episode. Which sucks when it's one episode of like a 10 or 12 episode season, but it's one episode. So I'm gonna like let it go and hopefully, you know, honestly, I feel similarly about the last two episodes of Futurama too. That first episode back, I was like, holy shit. And then the last two episodes, I've been like, what has happened? Like, I don't know if you saw this week week's episode.
I have not yet.
Bizarre, man. It was just so bizarre. Like, more bizarre than the episode from... Episode from last week, if you watched it, was also really, really weird.
It was. That's where I made my decision that I was going to wait a couple of weeks and watch them in bulk to see if maybe there's a purpose for all of this, because it doesn't seem like it's going somewhere. It just seems like they're like, I hate saying this, but it feels kind of Family Guy-ish. Where they're just throwing things at the wall to see what sticks, and nothing is sticking. And you are right. That first episode is so fucking good. It's like, we're back, baby. And then the second episode, when I watched that second episode, I was like, what?
I was willing to let it slide. And I was like, this is just a bump. Like, it's the second episode. And then this week's episode was not nearly as bizarre as the, death game whatever shit they had going on in the other episode, but it's still just a weird side tangent thing that, and part of me wonders, with that second episode, I wondered, did this have something to do with the contract negotiations? Because
there's
a big chunk of the second episode, there's no fucking Bender in that episode.
No, there's none. To which, let's be honest, it that's part of the reason why it suffered.
For sure. I Futurama will always suffer without the Bender Fry relationship. It doesn't need to be like we were saying earlier, it doesn't need to be the main focus. But if there's no Bender Fry thing going on, even if it's just in the background, the episode will always suffer. Because I love Fry and Leela. I love all the interactions with all the other characters, but their friendship is such a linchpin for that show that it has to be in there somewhere. And Bender's largely absent from the second episode, and not to spoil anything, Fry is largely absent from the third episode. I just wonder if there's some kind of thing where, you see it, I don't get it in animation, you see it in live action all the time, where it's like, hey, we can't pay you this, but we can lessen your episode count and pay you this. So you won't be in, that happened in, I think, the last season of Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Everybody basically took a pay cut, and then they got, dropped out of one or two episodes where they just wouldn't be in them. So they would get paid less money, but they worked less days. In animation, I don't get why that would be the case, but maybe it is. I don't know what their contracts dictate, but to have an episode that largely doesn't have Fry in it, that was... following an episode that largely doesn't have Bender in it. Literally almost Bender's in two or three scenes in the second episode, Fry's in maybe two or three scenes of the third episode. And so, yeah, the show really, really suffered for that. So it's unfortunate.
I hope that it's just a hiccup. I really do hope it's a hiccup, because we've talked about before in the past, this is my favorite. This is of the graining stuff, this is my favorite.
Absolutely.
By a country mile. I am not a Simpsons fan in any way, shape, or form. I know it sounds
For a large chunk of time.
Yeah, the first 15 years. The first 15 of the last 30 it years. Sounds
really, it's so bizarre to be like, I really liked that show for the first 15 years.
Yeah. Like, as they hit season,
what season 36? Are they on?
36? They're 35. They're going into 36. They had 35 last year, and they're going into 36 this year. Insanity. So, yeah. Like, and the only reason, no, actually, is it? Or maybe it's 34 last year. No, 36. It's 36 this year. You know, it's just, it's wild. It's wild to say that, you know, to say something.
Because, like, you mentioned Family Guy. It's easy to be like, I like Family Guy for, like, the first two or three seasons. Exactly. Despite the fact that it's been on for nearly 20 years. Or on and off the air for nearly 20 years. Or I like South Park for the first, like, 5 or 6 years. Despite the fact that it's been on the air for 20 years. Like, to say I like the first 15 seasons of something, and then it shit the bed for 20 years.
Yeah, like
although, to be like fair, I haven't watched it in God knows how long, so it might yeah. have gotten good again.
Like, literally, I think that it's been the early aughts was when I was last watching
the Simpsons. The movie was the last Simpsons thing I think I watched.
Yeah. Like, the movie was the last, like, actual thing. But, like, show-wise, like, from beginning to end, I think maybe 05 or 06. So it's literally been 20 years. You know, it was, like, my late 20s. And I was just, like, I think it was at the time where, like, Futurama was rocking. And I was like...
Yeah, it was, like, King of the Hills. Simpsons, King of the Hill, Futurama... And Family Guy, I think, were, like, the animation, like, block on Sunday nights. And, you know, like, I'd watch those, and I'd flip it over to Sunday Night Football. And, like that was my Sunday night, man. Like, it was great. And
it really
now, I, like it. Now my Sunday night is Last Week Tonight with John Oliver.
no, I still...
I'm an adult, and I don't want to be.
I still spend my time yelling at like, you know, once, like, you know, as we are headed into football season, and we'll talk about something football adjacent in a little bit, but like my pastime for Sunday nights is getting super upset and yelling at Collinsworth. That's become my thing. Yelling at the screen, yelling at Collinsworth, like he can actually hear me, and then looking at Tirico going, man, they are paying you just to shut up and be nice. Wow. Like, why can't I have Al Michaels come back, like, roaring to life and just have him just, yeah. But anywho, yeah, like, I'm, oh, man, that doesn't bode well. Like, I'm very concerned now, especially if you're saying that. But again, like you said, it could very well be because of the contract negotiations at the time, which were very contentious.
If Amy just has one or two lines of dialogue in an episode, it's fine. Like, Amy is a character that is, like, you can have the occasional Amy-focused episode, and they have. But she is a character that exists to walk in, get a laugh, and then leave, you know?
Yeah, that, like, is it.
Zoidberg exists for that reason, you know. There's,
and again, they've had
a handful of Zoidberg centric episodes, but that's it. You know.
But I mean, he's there to do, now Zoidberg is king.
What he's there for.
He's designed to do the final punchy line at the end of an episode, right? Like, to show up, like, occasionally in an episode, do something random, but it all ties together at the end. Like, you know, like you said, like Zach Brannigan, like, Zach is just occasionally he has a centric episode, but mainly he was there to make sure that we had somebody that was an agent of chaos, that was more than Bender and different than Bender. Right. Yeah. We'll see how it goes.
Well, speaking of Monday Night Football.
Yes.
Do you want to segue into that?
Yeah. Okay. So we just got announced. It was just announced that Nicolas Cage is going to be playing John Madden And specifically, it's a biopic about the creation of Madden Football, the video game. And it's actually, like, just announced, like, they announced it first that he was starring, but then they're talking about the director that's circling it, and he's troubled, but you and I both love his work, and I feel like he is the perfect person to bring this story to screen, which is David O. Russell.
Yeah.
I cannot think of two Jokers in the cinematic world that were more suited for this particular weird ass story. If you guys had heard anything about this, read the oral histories, this is going to be fan fucking tastic. Like, even if it doesn't hit all the bases, I guarantee you Nicolas Cage will be on fire. What are your thoughts about this? Because we haven't really talked about it.
So, like, I know he's not, like, he's problematic. I know David O. Russell's problematic.
Yeah.
Ripley thinks so, too. Even
if Rip says it, then we know that it's fucking problems.
But, I don't, like, I always enjoy his work when I watch it. Like,
yeah.
Like, people shit on Amsterdam, and it's, I do think it's a forgettable film. Like, you know, I don't think about it a lot, but, like, also don't think it was, like, designed to be this game-changing thing. It was entertaining as hell for me.
Yeah, and where else the hell are you going to see Taylor Swift get ran over?
Yeah.
Like, a graphic detail. Like there's some shit in that, there's always something that happens in his movie that you'll never see. Like, and that's the thing that I always kind of appreciate about this man and his work. And like I said, yes, I know he is very, very troublesome. They have tried to cancel him, much to his own chagrin. But he keeps on getting work because, unfortunately, for some people, he delivers. But I think that this is, like, the kind of purely chaotic story that's perfect for him. That's, like, literally designed for him. Like, you watch his work in The Fighter, and that's the kind of collective chaos that I kind of love. Like, I love, like,
Fighter's great. I think the only movie of his I haven't seen is, I think it's called Accidental Love. Or something like that. Yes,
the one with Jessica Biel where she plays a nymphomaniac because she got a nail in her head. Yeah. And I'm not going to watch that either. I just bridge too far.
Yeah. Like, I don't think I've seen I Heart Huckabee since I found out, like, about all the behind the scenes stuff. But yeah. I remember watching it and loving it. Like, I think Three Kings is great. The Fighter, Silver Linings Playbook. It's so much fun to watch. Like, Bradley Cooper and Robert De Niro are just so good playing off each other. And, like, American Hustle was, it's just fun to watch. Like, it's not game changing. It's just a good time at the movie. So, like, David O. Russell is going to do a movie with Nicolas Cage where Cage is playing John Madden, and it's about, like, the creation of Madden Football. I don't care what it's about. Cage is playing John Madden, and David O. Russell's directing? Okay, I'll be there.
Seriously. Like, I don't even, like, yeah, like, just the pedigree alone, just to see what Nicolas Cage is going to, how Nicolas Cage is going to look as John Madden, is enough for me to warrant like seeing the movie and hearing him do his own voice, like his own play on Madden. It's gonna be this is like the kind of like old school but like forward thinking like biopic that I want. Like this literally feels like an A24 movie, even though it's not an A24 movie.
Yeah,
because it's such a wild, and I like here's the thing about biopics. I don't like cradle to grave ones. I like taking the most interesting part of a person's life or the part that defined them, and using that as a microcosm for their life. Like, this is like my, yeah, this is my catnip.
Did it kind of sort of with Joy, right?
Yeah,
like
he did.
It's a little before and after, but like most of the movie is like really focused on like that one era of time for her. And, you know, again, like not game changing cinema, but well acted, well directed, dialogue pops. It looks great. It was fun to watch. I'll be there. Nicolas Cage playing Madden is insane to me. Like, I want to say this had been in the works for a while, and Will Ferrell was attached at one point.
Yes, he was.
Because I remember hearing about Will Ferrell doing some Madden project at one point.
Yes. Like, I heard that his Madden project, like, supposedly was about him taking over Monday Night Football. And because remember, like, it started off with Cosell and somebody else, and then it was his, like, it was like all the political maneuverings to bring him to Monday Night Football and what he brought to it and stuff. So that could still be, I mean, shit, there's so many things from his career that you could take from. I mean, hell, his Super Bowl run with the Raiders, and the fact that he was perpetually afraid of flying, and like, I mean, to his dying day, he was afraid of flying, and the Madden Mobile. I mean, you could just do a movie about that. He's one of those like extreme, like one of those characters, like, you know, like he's just one of those guys where if you take any section of his life, there's something super interesting about it. But I feel like they really chose the right thing, because I feel like it's fertile ground to talk about like video game creation stuff that we don't, something that hasn't been put on screen. I feel like in a way that could be a lot of fun. Like,
I didn't see it, but everybody I know that saw the Tetris movie said it was fun.
It was, but it was more of a, it's weird because it's a spy movie. Like, it's a weird spy comedy, and it has nothing to do with, like, it has very little to do with the creation of Tetris, but more about the negotiations to bringing Tetris to every place in the world and changing. But, needless to say, like, it is, like...
This feels like it could be, like, the Air Jordan movie that came out. Like, akin to that, where it's just fun and dynamic and, you know, again, not game-changing cinema, but just really a good, like, sit, watch, eat popcorn, like, have a good time watching a movie.
At its worst, I feel like it has the ability to be Air. At its best, it's going to be another Moneyball. Like, something that really changes the dynamic of, like,
Moneyball's a good, like, everybody talks about that movie and like loves it, and I did really enjoy it too, and I think it's full of great performances, but like, also, like, that's it. Not to say that that's not all you need, but like, you're just watching people standing and talking, and like, there's several montage scenes of like this like hyper inflated like math stuff, and like, it's just the way the story's told that's really compelling, and the acting that's really compelling. And so, like, if you were to stage Moneyball, as like, you could do that as like a play, you know?
You absolutely could. Well, I mean, it's like, to me, like it's one of the more ultimate dad movies, because it's about baseball, but it's not showing anything in baseball, but it shows the stuff that you don't ever get to see about baseball, right?
Right.
Like, it's all the behind the scenes shit, the things that we don't ever get to be privy to, that,
like, having to bring a guy into the office and sit him down and be like, yeah, we're trading you, man.
We're trading you. Yeah. You know, like shit like that. It's the thing. It's the reason why we watch like the Hard Knocks shit, even though like, you know, because they know we're desperate for the shit. Like, we're desperate for any content about football.
Hot Knocks must have taken a leap in the ratings, because we went from having one Hard Knocks show to three Hard Knocks shows.
Seriously. And like, and it's weird because it's like, that's the kind of weird, like, I feel like this Madden movie feels like everybody kind of like reading the tea leaves and going, oh shit, people want more content than just like, I have an idea. Like, there's this idea that I've been workshopping about like basketball. That's not about basketball. I won't say it here. But it's something that I've been workshopping for a long time, like years. And it's a very specific thing, but it's like, it's both kind of, it's like a workplace comedy, but it's not, and it's about sports, but it's not. And like, that's the sweet spot for me, like with movies, right? Like, don't give me, like, I love Major League and all, but I'm more of the Bull Durham guy where it's like, I want the drama. I want the insider baseball more than I want, like, even Major League does that. I mean, we hardly, like the important stuff is
montages of,
exactly.
Like, the only, there's a prolonged baseball scene at the jump, and then at the finale, and that's it. So
that's it.
Like, everything else is these little, like, just things pieced together, you know, I think another overlooked example, like, about football, specifically, not video games, but football. Yeah. I think Draft Day is a really fucking good movie.
Man, I just watched Draft Day a couple of weeks ago, and damn, is it good. Like, it makes, like, if the Browns could be that fucking good with their trading, they would be winning Super Bowls. Like, nobody is that good. But damn, is that a fun movie. Damn, is that we both have said at different times, man, that, like, the instant, like, it was weird because I had forgotten that Chad is in that movie. And as soon as I saw Chad, I was like, I got a little emotional and I got a little sad.
It's like right before Black Panther. And it was like, holy, like, is this guy just going to do, like, sports movies and biopics? Like, that's what he just keeps showing up in, because he's in Jackie, he's in Draft Day, and he's in, what's the other biopic he's in?
Get On Up.
Yeah, that's right.
Get On Up, which is so fucking good.
Yeah, it is. It's really good. And, like, he's great in all of them, but, like, you can kind of see, like, oh shit, is he about to get, like, pigeonholed into some bullshit? And then Black Panther comes out, and like this man could do whatever he wants, and unfortunately what happened, but he's so good. That movie's just, it's underrated, man.
Like, oh, so underrated. Because, like, and the weirdest part is, like, for me is, like, Ivan Reitman went out with a fucking bang. Like, that's a banger. Think about, that's his last movie. If he had not done that movie, his last movie would have been Super Ex-Girlfriend. Cringe as shit.
Yeah.
But the weirdest part is that I had no idea until that movie was released how much love he had for football.
Yeah.
Like, he had said it, and then you watch the movie and you go, oh, this man loves fucking football. You can tell. Like, just, like, that kind of, like, understanding through and through of, like if you, I mean, like, you know, we're both fans of football for what? Like, most of our lives. So, like, we've read the books, we've watched the documentaries. You can smell a poser. You can smell somebody who's just doing it for the money instantly, right? Like, you can just tell. And that there's nothing in that movie that feels false. Like, nothing. Like, even to the point that the age gap between Kevin Costner and Jennifer Gardner's characters, like, that's accurate. Like, all you have to do is watch some of these behind the scenes, and you see these guys that are in their 50s dating 50s.
I was about to say, how old is Bill Belichick? His girlfriend's like 26 or something. Yeah. Like,
I think he just turned 80, and his girlfriend's 26 or 27.
I mean, yeah. and we'll talk about football, I'm sure, plenty over the next few months. But it's still preseason, and like, I'm already starting to feel bad for teams specifically. I hate this, but like Minnesota, man, like, can't catch a break. Like, they had to go to the defensive coordinator and be like, you got to tone down the physicality. Like, in preseason, because players are getting hurt so bad.
Like, yeah. It's going to be a very interesting season this year. Like, just seeing, like, the way that teams are, what's happening to teams on the field, I'm like, okay.
And yeah. Your boy better back up that damn contract, man. That, like, when I saw what they were paying him, I was just like, 1 year in? Like, I get renegotiating his contract, but, like, 1 year in, you're making him one of the highest paid quarterbacks in the league.
$220 million. Like, I'm like, dude, you better not just be Aaron Rodgers, but you better be Favre too. Like, combined. Like, because, like, that is a, like, we're putting a lot
you
of.
You gotta bring a, cha- like, you gotta win a championship, man. Like, it's just. In
the next 2 years, like, you better be Aaron Rodgers. And then within the next 2 years, if you don't go to the big game this year, then you better go next year. And then when you do, you have to beat Mahomes. Like, that's all there is to it. Which, I mean,
Pittsburgh. Did you follow in the Pittsburgh shit?
Yes.
All right. I
followed it a little bit, but Jesus Christ.
So they signed Russell Wilson and Justin Fields, right? Like, so it's like, who's going to be the starting quarterback? Rumor is that Justin Fields has been so bad in practice and training that he was taking snaps as wide receiver.
Yeah. Wide receiver, folks.
This guy was the starting quarterback for the Chicago Bears last year.
Bears. Yep.
And he's getting beat out by Russell Wilson, who is at the... It should have already been at the end of his career. Like, I would have thought Denver would have been the nail in the coffin, but maybe that wasn't all him. But definitely not a lot of gas left in that tank.
I don't think that there's any gas left in that tank. Like, I think that, like, Fields is just, like, okay, so, like, all things Chicago, he's a bust because, you know, I mean, it's just the way that Chicago works, right? Well, you know,
Bears fans got to be happy though. Like,
oh yeah. He
wanted out of Chicago no matter what, and like people in Atlanta were beating the damn drum for the Falcons to sign this guy, and I was like, we had a young quarterback that, you know, had all the flash and like, and he fizzled out in two or three games, like. No, let's not do this.
But I mean, you guys have your own special problem of signing two high level quarterbacks. Like, I think
the problem. See, I didn't understand drafting Penix to begin with, but on the flip side of that, like, hey, if we're going to be as good as we expect to be, we signed a veteran quarterback. We don't intend for him to be here for more than two or three seasons. We're drafting young now so that we don't have to trade up in the draft later when we're as good as we expect us to be. And we need a quarterback 3 years from now. Because if they're drafting at the end of the draft 3 years from now when they absolutely need a quarterback, they're going to have to trade up to get somebody good. And, like, if they see something in Penix, then why not? And we've had a chance to see him play. It is preseason, but he looked good. Mm-hmm. So it seems like the reverse of the Pittsburgh situation. I know Pittsburgh didn't draft Justin Fields, but, hell, he's barely got 2 years under his belt. So,
yeah.
He's pretty young.
Yeah, so, and he's a bust. Like, let's be honest.
I think so too. Like, I was like, so happy that Atlanta didn't make him an offer. Like, I wasn't thrilled with the Cousins thing, and they definitely botched a lot of that. And I know they pissed him off by not even like coming to him and being like, hey, this is the contract we're offering you, but we expect in 3 years, like we're drafting somebody. We intend to draft Penix, and in 3 years, mm-hmm. he's probably going to be our starter, you know, but it might be by the end of this season if he keeps looking as good as he looks. Because if they, I know I'm putting all my eggs in a basket, but like if they play as well as everybody seems to think, well, a lot of Atlanta fans seem to think that they're going to play, then, I mean, we could see Penix, because we could be going into fourth quarters with leads, you know?
Yep. Like, no, and just giving him time, because, yeah. like, let's be honest, like, as much as I dislike Kirk Cousins because he was a Viking, and, you know, like, rivalries are real.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you, like, especially
if it was like, hey, Drew Brees is playing for the Falcons, I'd be like, let's burn this bitch down.
Down, like, exactly. Exactly. So, the thing is that the thing that I could never not count on was Kirk Cousins being bad. Like,
right.
there was something about that dude. He has a swag to him mid-season.
It's injury prone. That's yep. all it is. It's that yep. midway through the season, he could wind up in a fucking boot. And so,
but if he doesn't, he's golden until yeah. the playoffs.
Yeah.
In which we all know how he fares with the playoffs. I mean, most quarterbacks don't know how to do anything in the playoffs. Dak Prescott.
Yeah. Anyway.
Have you seen that fucking CD Lamb stuff?
Yeah.
Somebody
needs to tell Jerry Jones to just shut the fuck up.
Shut the fuck up.
Like, it feels like the old, like, fighting it out in the press shit, like that the Yankees used to do.
Yes. Like, or Mark Schott used to do.
Yes.
If Cincy, like, man, like, I, like, it is both, he is both Mark Schott with his fucking stupid racism and his, like, his old school, old world racism, and then, like, the shit that, what's his name used to do? Oh, God, I can't even think of his name. Steinbrenner. Steinbrenner yeah. used to do with all of the Yankee players. Like, I understand why, like, Reggie wanted to take a bat to that motherfucker. Like, yeah. because he's a piece of shit.
I told you about that documentary.
I watched it. The Bronx.
Yeah. the Bronx Zoo. Yeah. just like, so, oh my God, man.
And then it made me go back and watch The Bronx is Burning. The John Turturro as Billy Martin. Have you seen that show?
No, I haven't.
Oh, dude. Like, if you want to see, like, if you're, like, into the whole, like, behind, like, we're talking about behind the scenes stuff, it's so good. It's so good because it's, like, early era FX. Like, it's, like, during the Shield. So, like, everything is really un-PC. So you get this really raw, like, show that doesn't cookie coat anything. It's really good. Like,
I might have to check it out. I hate the Yankees.
Oh, I hate the Yankees too. So, like, watching them burn, like, watching just
that's,
like
that's what,
like,
made me so mad about that documentary, The Bronx Zoo, is like it gets to the end of, like, when they make their comeback, and I'm like, I don't want to see all that, because literally it's them beating the Braves in the World Series, and like that's the beginning of their new dynasty, like. I wanted it to end with, like, yeah, they sucked. Like, this whole team sucked. It was, like, you didn't even have to get to the comeback. I was there. I remember it. Before we're gonna talk about Alien Romulus, guys. But before we do that, I just remembered I sent you something earlier this week
that we both got to see.
I know a lot of people probably haven't got to see it, but fuck it. We're gonna talk about it anyway. We got to see a leaked version of the trailer for Thunderbolts that they showed at Comic-Con a few weeks ago. And look, I know people are like largely seem undecided about Captain America. I think the trailer looks good. I'm there for the movie. Like, I think it's going to be fun. But the Thunderbolts trailer, holy shit. That it looks incredible.
Like, literally, like, no notes, no notes. Like, from the moment that they used Where Is My Mind, like, I was hooked. I'm like, oh, damn, you're doing this? I don't know, like, everything about it just worked. Like, it just, like, I know this is going to sound weird, but, like, if this trailer is the indication of the movie that we're going to get next year in May, this is the movie that I wanted Suicide Squad in both iterations to be, but really kind of wasn't.
Yeah.
I mean,
it does feel like Marvel's version of a Suicide Squad.
Yep. It very much so does. And it just, like, it looks like everybody is on fire. And I hope this is the case, that we're getting, like, it's Florence Pugh's movie. Like, even though, like, everybody is around her, but it feels like this is, like, her, like, gift for waiting so long to actually get something. And, like, her as Yelena, like, it feels like, at least in the trailer, it feels like this is her movie. And to which, I mean, you know, damn. Like, just everything worked about it. Like, it just, the scenes, the way that it was shot, I don't know, man.
The humor, like, it's not, like, it's that biting kind of humor. Like,
yes.
You know, and it's characters that, I hate to say it like this, but, I mean, you don't necessarily care about. So, nope. Like, you can take chances with those characters they stopped being able to do with, like, Thor and the big characters, because they didn't want to damage anything, so they just stopped taking chances with them, and that's really the downfall of, like, all of that is,
yeah.
You know, everybody who didn't die in Endgame, like, they just started playing it safe, you know, and so this no doesn't, whatsoever. Yeah, this doesn't feel like playing it safe. I don't think Captain America feels like playing it safe, because, like, I mean, this is, you know, a Brave New World, right?
Yep.
You know, we're going to see them address things that are probably going to have some backlash, I think. Like, there's probably going to be a lot of people the wrong people pointing at it and calling it woke bullshit or whatever. But, like, I don't know. I want to see that thing. You know, I want to, like, they call out Isaiah in the Captain America trailer. Like, that's Marvel canon. You know, like, they do this, like, their version. They talked about it in Falcon and Winter Soldier. Their version of, like, the testing on African-Americans before they gave the serum to Steve Rogers, because it had to be perfect before they give it to the, you know, blonde-haired white dude. So, that movie feels like addressing some of those things that got brought up in that show. But I mean, back to the Thunderbolts, like, just, I don't know, man. Like, it, we get glimpses of them, like, fighting each other that just look amazing. We get Bucky's pulling his arm out of the fucking dishwasher, which shouldn't have made me as happy as it did, but oh my God, it made me smile. It's just like, yeah, of course that's where he keeps his arm.
Like, everything that David Harbour says as Crimson, oh God, I can't even think of his name now. Why can't I think of his name? What is his name?
I should know this because I'm a Marvel guy and I can't remember his name.
Oh, good Lord, what is his name? Why can't I think of it?
It's Alexi, but I'm trying to think.
Yeah, of but it's his code name. Good grief.
Yeah, I don't remember.
Red Guardian. There we go.
Red Guardian. Yeah.
Red Guardian. Yeah, like everything that he does as Red Guardian is like, oh man, like I just love this. Like, I mean, it just like getting all of these, like you said, getting all of these useless, not useless, but like unused side characters, like Ghost, US Agent.
Yeah, Ghost and Taskmaster are both coming back.
Yeah,
like that's. Which I know a lot of people are like, whatever. Like, there was so much bitching about those characters when they debuted. And, like, Ghost, I think, was a great idea that just fell by the, like, way. Like, that, her whole thing was really interesting, but, like, it just didn't go anywhere in that movie. So, giving her, like, bringing her back around. Taskmaster, same thing. I know a lot of people were pissed because... Oh, wasn't I don't care. Like I like, yeah. You know what? Like I can still pick up a Taskmaster comic book and read it. So I can have that version of the Taskmaster. It doesn't have to be like, you know, on screen for me to enjoy Taskmaster.
No, it doesn't. I mean, and like, as we saw in the Spider-Man video game, there are different iterations of Taskmaster that they can, that like, I mean, you know, it's not so, like, this is what I don't get, like, the larger conversation of this, and this is something that we're going to get to with when we talk about Romulus, which is that, like, I honestly don't know why fans even fucking bother. Like, you're not a fan. Like, if all you're going to do is bitch and moan about something and not come in with an open mind, because do you really want to see the same shit over and over again?
Or I mean, do you apparently.
Yeah, I guess.
So, like, it's weird coming off Deadpool and Wolverine.
Yeah.
To because that is kind of like, hey, play the hits. But, like, also, I don't want you to always play the hits. You know what I mean? Like, so I'm excited to see something a little different. And. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I get more upset. I understand the Star Wars like backlash way more than I understand the Marvel backlash, because like Star Wars, this is what we have. Like, there's no other version of this. We're not like, there's no like, oh well, I still have the comics if I'm not enjoying whatever it is I'm watching, whatever adaptation, you know, if I didn't like the Deadpool movies, oh well, I still have all the Deadpool comics, and there's
you have
versions in there that I love.
Yeah.
So
you have 25 years of Deadpool in various iterations. I mean, literally, like, we have a scene where we see literally the hundreds of Deadpool variants that are comic accurate depictions. So it's like, there's so many Deadpools to pick from that you don't really need to like, yeah. And well, and that's the thing, is that this is where I don't get it, which is like I could, like, I loved that trailer. Like, I really loved that trailer because it was giving me something that I love, which is a Men on a Mission film, but also it's the Dirty Dozen type and not the like squeaky clean kind. It's the Inglorious Bastards version of it, right? Yeah. And it's giving us all of these guys that were literally side throwaway characters, with the exception of Bucky, right? Like, literally, they were side characters in other movies.
I think Yelena's maybe the only other one that got like a little uptick, but
yeah,
and really only because of how good Florence Pugh is. I feel like if she's not as good as that character, like, she also falls into that like meh kind of thing.
Yeah,
you know. So
no, absolutely. And it's not like these characters, like, it's not like each one of these people isn't like a star in their own right.
Right.
And could carry their own film. I feel like more of it is the lack of good writing for these characters that made it such. Though I will say, Walker, US Agent, was like, you know, like that's one of those ones where it's kind of like, okay, well, that was good, but I feel like in the context of everything, like Falcon and Winter Soldier, I feel got like it suffered from COVID, right? Like that was
for sure. I mean, they had to rewrite the whole show.
Yeah, the whole show. Like to which also they're doing again, like they literally did again with both Thunderbolts and with Brave New World. Which I mean, you know, I mean we've heard all of the stories about how much rewriting goes on and how much reshooting goes on Marvel movies. You know, so this is not a thing. This is not a big deal, at least to me, because at the end of the day, like if this film delivers in the way that it feels like it's going to deliver, there should be no complaints. Like who cares about behind the scenes drama, you know? And like, I just like, to me, like the biggest thing is I just want to see Ford and Julie Louise Dreyfus like occupy space together. I don't know why.
And you know, not for nothing, I know there's been a lot of backlash against the new voices that they brought into the MCU to tell new stories. Yeah. But this guy is a new voice to the MCU. He has not worked in even superhero cinema. I mean, I think the beef is what got him the job. But like, he's also, he's a unique storyteller.
Paper Towns is a movie that I found very interesting because of the way that it's told. Have you seen that movie?
No. Jake. I kept wanting to say Pete Schreier, but Jake Schreier. No, but I have seen Robot and Frank. It's been a long time, but I've seen Robot and Frank.
Oh, Robot and Frank is delightful. Like, it's just utterly delightful. It's exactly what you expect a con man to do when they get a robot. Like, you know? And Frank Langella is so good in the movie. So good. Robot and Frank is great. And he just like, he has a very unique storytelling acumen, like, you know, in when it comes to things. So that very much so is like one of those things where I am looking forward to seeing what him and Lee Sung Jin, like, you know, who's the writer of Beef, who worked in tandem with Jake. To bring Beef to life. And absolutely. It is going to be. And then also, like, what I didn't realize, and I don't know if she came on before or after the reshoots, I feel like she was brought on after, is Joanna Callow, which anybody who knows Logan would know that he's probably a huge fan of her, with her being the writer and director of Hacks and Bojo Hacks, Bojack Horseman, Jesus Christ. I feel like she was brought on afterwards because like her punchy acidicness, like just
she's also part. She's I think she's writer and producer on The Bear too. So
yes, she is. She is. So they have all these people that like are different creatives bringing something to life that, like, you know, I don't know, like I feel like it's going to be one of those things where I think it's going to surprise people. Like, I honestly think that I like that Marvel is backed in a corner, because if we think about it, what were the best things that they produced? It was when Kevin was told, you're not going to be able to do this. There's no way in Avengers movies.
I was talking about this with somebody at work. I convinced him to watch the bootleg trailer, and he watched it, and he was like, yeah, that looks incredible. And I was like, here's the thing. Like, we all appreciate, like, where we got to with Endgame, but, like, if you remember where it started with, we don't have anything. Like, these are the things we've got, and nobody gives a fuck about them, because nobody cared about Iron Man and Captain America and Thor. There's a reason Marvel still had the rights to those characters. Nobody cared about them, and they made people care about them. And that's done with, you know, good storytelling, good acting, like solid movie going. And we've talked about this. We talked about this in regards to the Alien franchise, and we'll get to that in like literally 2 minutes. When you're backed into a corner, when you have obstacles, you tend to make better art. Like, and you can argue that this isn't art, it's pop, but I mean, today's culture is pop. Like, that's what it is.
Yep.
And so they needed all of this, you know, because we've got Deadpool and Wolverine, which is a greatest hits album, but like, you know, it's the greatest hits album full of songs that outside of like Wesley Snipes, but even by the end included Wesley Snipes, you were like, mm-hmm. This is all trash. But now here we are, however many years later, and like, you know, I didn't like NSYNC. I don't like Bye Bye Bye. But you know what? I fucking love Bye Bye Bye, and I like NSYNC. So, like, I was at a place, and now I'm just like, oh, no, wait, that's great. Like, it's fun, you know? I don't want to hear the other tracks on that album, unless they were radio hits. But,
yeah,
you know, and so, you know, maybe that gets us to, like, hey, we're backed into a corner, we played the hits, and now, you know, we come out the gate swinging with some new shit that people are not expecting, you know.
Mm-hmm. And, like, the whole thing is that, like, I don't think that people can truly, like, people truly appreciate what a remix is, right? Like, a true remix. Like, I feel like, and that's what we're kind of getting to at this point, which is that there's like, yeah, there's some stuff that they haven't told that they can tell, but now it's about how you approach that and how you remix all of the things that you have and the components that you have. You've
kind of heard this before. Like, so a few weeks ago, I was on a little like day shopping trip or whatever with some friends from work. It was me and this girl Ashley and this girl Katie that I work with, and they're into books and we like to go to bookstores. And anyway, so we're riding around in my car, and like I had it on Spotify just playing whatever, and Linkin Park comes on, and they were like, oh, I used to love Linkin Park and da 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 da. And I said, have y'all ever listened to Collision Course? And my friend Ashley had. She was like, oh, yeah, that's so good. But Katie, she was like, what's Collision Course? I was like, Linkin Park and Jay-Z. She said, what? I said, you've never heard it. And she said, no. I was like, okay. So grab my phone, just Collision Course, hit play. And, like, I mean, it's a very short album. But so for, like, the 20 minutes we were in the car, her fucking head was just like, what is this? Like, how is this working? Like, and if, for anybody who's never heard it, like, Linkin Park and Jay-Z did a thing for MTV that was supposed to kind of spark a new thing that just fell apart of, like, these bands or artists coming together and, like, doing remix versions of both their songs that kind of combine everything. And, like, it worked so incredibly well that, like, I eventually got to a point in my mind where I can't hear the real versions of either of those songs. I just want to hear the combination, you know? Like, I want to hear that remix version of those songs together. And, like, I hope that's what we're getting to.
And that is like the perfect summation of like what the hope is. And I feel like that leads perfectly into another remix, and like a remix that created something that feels both new and
much used. Like Katie riding in the car listening to Collision Course for the first time.
Sure.
I was sitting in a theater yesterday watching Alien Romulus going like, I can't believe this is fucking working. Like,
yeah.
One, I thought, so spoilers for Alien Romulus, Adam and I both got to see it opening day, which is rare for both of us to get to see it on the first day. I went to the very first showing of the day, walked in, bought my Alien popcorn bucket, which I was happy to get. It was the Facehugger bucket because that's the AMC one and that's the theater chain near us. So I didn't get the Alien head one, but it's fine. I like the Facehugger bucket. The Alien head looked unruly anyway. So, I even got a little, it wasn't a patch. It's like a rubber sticker thing that I guess they handed out to theaters.
The Weyland-Yutani.
Yeah. That was pretty cool. Yeah.
I got a pin that had, because I went to see it at the, I went to see it at the Dolby Cinema.
Yeah.
And it's basically the same. It looks like Alien Isolation, like the video game, like the poster for the video game, but it's not, it's Alien Romulus and it has, what's her name in it? Kaylee Spinney, the star of this movie. I did not get the popcorn bucket though. I wanted to,
Which one did your theater have?
The Facehugger one. Okay. Because I had an AMC. I was not next to, I don't have a Cinemark, or you damn well better believe that I would have gotten the Facehugger stupid thing, like the, you know, the one that they had that had the, it was,
oh,
like,
yeah
the sample jar that has the Facehugger in it. Cinemark had that one. Cinemark and Regal, but I don't have Regals or Cinemarks near me. I just have an AMC, so I have two AMCs. I was genuinely surprised I got this little, like, the Weyland-Yutani patch.
It was really cool. Like, it was a nice surprise to walk in. Like, it got me even more pumped. And then I wasn't going to get the bucket, but I went and saw it with a buddy of mine, Ricky. He's a huge Alien franchise fan. And he was just like, let's go. And I was waiting on him to get there and I was like, I'm going to go ahead and buy snacks. And I got up there and I was like, how much is the popcorn bucket? And, cause I was going to get a popcorn and a drink anyway. She was like, it's $30. I was like, does it come with popcorn? She was like, yeah, it comes with a separate large popcorn. And I was like, oh, okay. So I was like, so you don't put it in a bucket? And she was like, no, a lot of people get mad cause they want to keep the bucket pristine. Okay, so she gave me the popcorn. I got my drink and I'm sitting there waiting on him and I'm looking at the bucket and I'm like, I'm going to take this thing out of the plastic. You got to kind of put it together. And so I'm sitting there. I was like, it's pretty cool. I was like, you know, I could wash this when I get home. So I just dumped my popcorn into the bucket when he got there. I was like, were you going to get popcorn? He was like, yeah. I was like, here's a large bucket. Just get him to refill it. So we saved ourselves about $10 worth of popcorn. They didn't have any drink containers though, like they did for Deadpool. No. Which it's fine, I didn't need to get another one, but I was like, that would have been cool.
Yeah, mine was still selling the Deadpool ones.
Yeah, they had a shit ton of those. Like, they were so worried about running out that, like, I guess AMC just produced a shit ton of them. I'm like, man, if I'd have waited, I probably could have got one online real cheap. But I was like, no, I got to have it now. But anyway, so yeah, sat down. I was not prepared for this movie to invoke all of the Alien franchise. Every section of it.
Yes.
Film-wise, at least. I won't speak to books or games. Although I do think it does invoke the one thing in Alien video games that the movies hadn't been able to do until now, and that was make the facehugger
so fucking scary.
Yes. Like, super fucking scary. Like, there's so much to this movie. Like off the top, like, Edie Alvarez is an inspired fucking choice. Like, I didn't think of it at first, and then, like, as I was watching it, like, he is both, like, in a weird way, he is both very similar to the way that, like, because I started thinking about his filmography and, like, how he approached movies and how he approached things, and he's very similar to the way that Ridley approaches things visually, with a visual language. Because he's very visual forward, right? Like, you don't think about it, but then when you watch his films and you watch, like, his, like, especially something like Don't Breathe, like...
I'm going to be straight up. This is the first film of his I've ever seen.
Oh!
I have not watched anything that this man has. Not that I know of, anyway.
Okay. You are going to be in for a treat, because, like, he, like, his... Like, his Evil Dead and his Don't Breathe, and his short film, Panic Attack, which is a Spanish-made short film, are, like, and Don't Breathe 2, like, all of those together kind of make this really great, like, it's a very interesting filmography. Like, even I even like his, I'm going to say it, I even like his girl, like his Girl with the Dragon Tattoo sequel. As long as you don't.
I didn't know that this existed.
Yes. And like, the weirder part is that did she, like, my favorite part is that Claire Foy is the one that plays, like, it's a very weird film, but very much, if you don't take it as, like, if you take away the Fincher and the other series and you look at it as a standalone movie, it's kind of fantastic what he does with that.
I kind of want to see this now. So
yeah.
So there's a small chance I may have seen his Evil Dead film, because I vaguely remember watching a remake of the Evil Dead. Is that the only one that exists?
Yes.
So I may have seen that.
Other than the newest one that just came out last year, which was like set in Detroit. I didn't see that one. Okay.
So yeah, I may have seen his Evil Dead, because that was a decade ago. So, but I watched it in, like, passing, like, you know, like, after it came out on video, like, I streamed it or something. So, it, like, it doesn't stick in my head enough for me to, like, pinpoint, like, things about him, you know, like, as a director. Be like, oh, that's something he's bringing to the table. You know, like, I was just really impressed with, like, his desire to stay true to, like, an established lore, which sounds weird, but, like, even, like, the Alien, even the people that originally made the Alien film, Ridley Scott, like, couldn't stick to the lore that he, like, helped create. Like, it veers off in such a weird direction when he got back involved with it. But then this movie, like, also pays tribute to that. Like,
in a big fucking way.
Yeah.
At the same time, it does this fucking Alien Resurrection thing.
It somehow legitimizes the worst fucking movie in the whole series. Like, I left out of there going, like, I think I need to rewatch Alien Resurrection. I will say that the end, like, the alien person thing, like, that whole thing at the end was my least favorite part of the movie. Maybe because it invoked Alien Resurrection so heavily. But it wasn't that I hated it. It was just, like, I thought it was one more thing, you know?
Yeah, the bridge too far. The one step too far.
You see that in horror movies all the fucking time. You see it, you specifically see it in the Alien film. film franchise a lot. Like, yes. I know how dare I badmouth Aliens, but I'm gonna. I think Aliens is a huge, proponent, I guess, to try to keep it positive, of that specific thing. Every fucking time, it's like, oh, nope, it's not dead. It's still here.
It's not done. Exactly. The thing that I appreciated most was, overall, was the fact that, and I feel like this is why he got hired, was Feedy has this ability to take working class characters and make them desperate, and desperate enough to do things that justify going into a haunted spaceship and getting into some seriously deep shit.
I was so impressed with that, which sounds weird, but in this day and age, the hurry up filmmaking, got to get it out there.
Yeah.
It's you know, and known IP, so we just got to rush it out. To get into those characters as much as he did, even though it's only 20 minutes of the movie. I really appreciated that. Seeing why they, you said, would do something like this, to make them so desperate. Her standing in that line and being told, oh, yeah, you know, yeah, you were supposed to be able to go, but, we're shorthanded and we need more. So, the price to leave has been up. So it'll be 6 or 7 more years and then maybe you'll get to go.
And you're going to go into the mines where your parents fucking died, and you're sure to die. Yeah, dude. But then also invoking colonization and everything that Alien, there are certain touchstones to an Alien film, right? And it really feels like the best ones. And I will say this, for me, it's the first three, and then everything else is fan fiction, except for this new movie. Even Ridley's shit feels like fan fiction. He's so, every single, starting with Resurrection, as soon as you brought her back, it kind of killed everything, right? But then you get Prometheus and Covenant, and both of those films feel like rich people making rich movies. Do you know what I mean? It's not the Ridley of, the Ridley
very that naval, was 40 naval years old. Gazing and yes. for, long stretches of time. And then, there are these hints of what could be there, and they lose track of it so many times. There are large chunks of those movies that are really fucking good.
Yes, they are.
Prometheus and Alien. Covenant. What's the Covenant?
Covenant.
I can't say Resurrection. I was telling my buddy Ricky when we walked out, I was I need to go watch Resurrection because it's probably been 15 years since I watched that movie. And I've seen it probably 3 times, and every time it left such a bad taste in my mouth, I was just but it would come out on a new format. I watched it on VHS, watched it on DVD, watched it on Blu-ray. And just no more. 4K is not gonna fucking improve it. So I just no more. I watched all the bonus features. I'm good. But walked out of the movie going maybe I need to rewatch Resurrection because maybe I just need to judge it on its own merit. And maybe it still fails. I'm sure it will.
Yeah.
But honestly, it does a lot of work, weirdly enough, to help me better appreciate what Prometheus was trying to do and what Alien Resurrection was trying to do. Plot spoilers, but the point of view of Weyland was trying to he was trying to get the secret to live forever. Like, he wanted to be young again, you know?
Fucking trillionaires being trillionaires, right? Like, the one thing, like, and he even said, I remember him saying it, like, the Waylon saying, like, the only thing that money can't buy is more time.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and, like, okay, so, like, here's a question for you. Like, how crazy is it that all it takes is, like, 4 or 5 lines? Not a whole explanation, but just, like, 4 or 5, like, slight lines and back and forth during a very tense situation to recontextualize everything for a movie.
I mean, it takes the right writer. I mean,
yep.
This whole idea of, like, and again, this is why I need to revisit Alien Resurrection. Maybe they kind of try to lay it out, and I was just like, this is boring and I don't like it. But the idea of, like, it's not just about, like, the bioweapon that is the alien. It's also mm-hmm. about, like, advancing humanity to the point like where we could exist in space. Like, that whole monologue that the Ash Who Isn't Ash gives.
Rook, which I love that his name.
It's pretty great.
It's pretty great that they reference both androids, right? That's great.
I was expecting it when they're hooking it up. I was like, this is gonna be Lance Henriksen, because like ever since the second movie, it seems like they try to find a way mostly to fit him into alien things where it's appropriate. And that they went back to, I can't remember the actor's name, but the guy that played Ash in Alien.
Ian Holm.
That's right. Yeah. And did that. It's just, it's fucking incredible, man.
It's so good. And like the fact that, okay, so like, the other thing that I love about this film, like a really big bump, is after I was tired of android bullshit in the first two films, like in Prometheus and Alien Covenant, because
yes,
like how they managed to, like how Feedy and his co-writer Rodo were able to give me androids that I cared about, that I liked, and that were absolutely fucking terrifying in the way that Ash is terrifying in the first film.
But see, that's the thing, right? Like, the reason Ash is terrifying in the first film is because for most of the fucking movie, you don't know he's an android.
Exactly.
You don't know. And, like, then before you find out he's an android, you think he's just a company guy, right? Like, he's just the fly in the ointment. And then you find out, like, it's this progressive thing of, like, fuck, like, that makes it so scary. And, like, this isn't the same, but, like, when you find out that her brother, Andy, is an android, which also, I will say, like, it didn't take me long. I figured it out before they, like, I got the joke before they actually brought it up in the movie, but it took a couple of beats before I was like, oh, Andy, that's funny. Like, it's an android, and they call him Andy.
Yes.
But, like, when you first see that he's an android, like, when he glitches out, when she comes out of the office, like, it's a little, for me anyway, it was like, oh, I pull back from this character. Like, I thought, like, you know, he was, like, mentally undeveloped. Like, something going on. Like, you don't really know the nature of their relationship. You hear her say, I think in the office, something about her brother. I'm like, oh, that's a little strange. You know, just for obvious reasons. and because they clearly don't look anything alike. So I'm like, oh, that's something we may or may not get into. But then immediately you find out he's an android. And mm-hmm.
like, I emotionally, like, step back from that character because I'm like, oh, I've been down this road. Like, mostly fuck these guys. Like, but, like, literally two or three scenes later, when they go meet up with her friends, and mm-hmm. that asshole's just like, he's not your brother. He's just some broke down piece of junk that your dad found in the trash and, you know, tried to, you know, rig up or whatever. And then, it, you know, maybe it says a lot about me, but like, then like it starts like edging back towards like, oh, so this is, it's the island of misfit toys, you know?
Like, yes.
It's the toys in, you know, not Andy's room. It's the toys in Sid's room, right? where you're like, oh, they're kind of scary. But then, like, once you get out of the shadows and figure out what has happened to them, like, it takes, like, it just dissipates all that.
Mm-hmm.
And then, fucking 35 minutes later, when they reboot him with the Rook's, like, disk thing.
Yeah, his information, his OS, his kernel.
What a fucking incredible performance that is.
Yeah.
Like, so fucking good, man. And,
like, I mean, he's a fucking star. David Johnson is, like, the fine...
I don't know this guy, man. Like, he's in
Gen V. He makes me want to watch Industry now. Like, I definitely, okay.
I need to watch Industry. I knew he's in Gen V. Like,
yes.
No, he's not. He's in Gen Y. I'm looking at it wrong.
But oh, okay.
I've seen him in something.
What is he in? I know that, like, I knew that he, like, I haven't seen.
Oh, no, maybe I haven't. Maybe I haven't.
Okay. Because I know that he was in, he was in Industry, and I knew that he was, like, he's, like, one of the main guys in the movie, or in the show, and I just knew him from that. And I don't know him as in, like, I've seen the performance. I've just seen him in the trailers and stuff. And he's, like I said, like, he's, like, one of the big three or four main characters in that show. And that's the only thing I know him for. Other than, like, you know,
hell,
like,
he hasn't done that much.
Yeah. I mean, he's fairly young. I mean, he's like, I think he's 20 or something like that. Which is just all the more amazing, right? Like, he is, like, he literally steals the show, and that is with a great performance by Kaylee Spaney, who's, like, you know, our, like, you know, who plays Rain, the main character in the movie, the final girl, if you will.
She's fantastic. Like, I knew she was in Civil War, which I wanted to see. This dude I worked with talked that movie up forever, and I was just like, I just never got around to watching it. So I think she was in Priscilla too last year.
Yeah, she was. I saw her in Priscilla. I mean, I know her. I definitely know her because she's in one of my favorite movies of the last 10 years, Bad Times at the El Royale.
One day I'm going to watch that fucking movie.
Fuck, dude, you got to see. Like, when you see it, we will have an episode about that movie because it is that fucking good. I mean, Cynthia Erivo, fucking John Hamm.
Yeah, the cast is incredible. And I wanted to watch it. I wanted to watch it, and I just never got around to it.
Oh, dude, I think it's on HBO Max, and I mean, it's Drew Goddard. Like,
yeah.
You can't, like that was the thing that, like, I mean, like, I die on the hill for that movie. Bad Times at the El Royale is, like, it's like Quentin without being Quentin in the creepiness of Quentin, if that makes sense. And truly, like, nobody should be surprised about, like, Chris Hemsworth, like, ultimate, like, evil turn in Mad Max if they had saw Bad Times at El Royale, because it's just like, it, like, that movie is just as, like, his role in that is just as good. Like, it's like, so, like, I've seen her in a lot, and I like her a lot.
I was honestly disappointed with, like, I think she's fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
I really hoped it's Isabel Merced.
Said, yeah, the
she would have had a lot more to do, because, mm-hmm. I She was in Beast Wars. Last night.
Yeah.
And I thought, like, she was pretty good. Like, and she was also in Madam Web.
But also, like, the thing is that she's going to get a re-up because she's Hawk Girl now. You know that, right?
Okay.
Probably did. It's just she looks so homely in this movie, and all the pictures we've seen of her as Hawk Girl is super buffed out. Like, her guns, like coming to the gun show and shit. Like, she worked out, like, fucking crazy. But so, here she's, like, literally, like, in fucking overalls and bibs and shit. So you kind of can't tell.
She's on, and this, like, I can't believe I ever watched this, but I also really enjoyed it. She was Dora in Dora the Explorer, the live-action movie, which is a really fun and charming movie that I really didn't think I would enjoy. And, she got so short shrifted in fucking Madam Web, and, like, I was excited that she was in this movie, and, like, she doesn't do much here either.
No.
Other than, like, sit around and, like, literally... something happens in the first 5 minutes of their on their way to the ship, and it's just like, oh, you lay down and get some sleep and we'll go do this, and she's just not in the movie for 30 minutes.
No, but her final fucking scene, fucking terrifying.
That birthing scene is fucking birthing? Rough, man.
I feel like Feedy's directing style was like, oh yes, I see what you did there, David Cronenberg in The Fly. Hold my beer, guys. We're gonna do the same thing, but we're gonna do it worse. Like, everything is like, it feels like in this movie is like a challenge. Like, they wrote this script very purposefully to create an entire movie that works as a cohesive whole, but it has like these little weird Easter eggs of like, oh, you made fun of this. I'm going to do it, but I'm going to do it better than the people that did it before. Like, I'm going to do it better than Fincher. I'm going to do it better than even Ridley when he was doing some weird shit. I'm going to do it better than everybody. Yeah. I don't know how. Like, it's a weird magic trick and I like it, and I don't want to read too much into it. I feel like the weirdest part is that it feels so tactile. Like, we've been so used to fucking, like, even in, like...
Walking Out, that was the first thing I said, Walking Out. I was like, you know what? I know that there's CGI in this movie. I know Ian Holm is largely CGI.
Yeah.
Like, he died in 2020, unfortunately. Yep. But, like, I think they do a fantastic job of, like, revering the fact that this man has passed on, mm-hmm. and not like and also capturing a performance by him that doesn't fucking exist.
No.
And like, he's just as terrifying, and some of the CGI there is a little like Uncanny Valley-ish.
Yes. But they do the smart thing, which is, for the most part, he's on video screen. Right.
Once they get away from him and you just have to see him on those old CRT screens, it doesn't fucking matter. It just doesn't matter. You know?
No.
And like, it was giving me Portal vibes. Have you played Portal? Where like, every once in a while, the fucking thing would pop up and just be like, oh, hey, by the way, are you going to die? Only he's way more menacing than that thing was. That thing was always happy to tell you were going to die.
Absolutely. There's like a tactileness to everything. Like, and that was because I was watching and reading some interviews, was that most of the sets were real. And most of the locations that were considered, like it's all set extensions. It's not volume. And they went to places that had like actual like color gamuts that he wanted. Like, he was like, like Ridley taught him something, I think, but he was saying that Ridley said, don't do the volume. Figure out where the color is of the lighting that you want, and we'll fly there and we'll do it there, because that's how I'm doing it on Gladiator. I'm not using any of the, I'm just going there and then we're building sets and then we're extending them out. But the light is the most important thing for you, is that whatever you want this to look like, we have to find a place that looks exactly like the lighting that you want. And so, like, literally, they spent months searching different various, like, literally cargo storage places in Eastern Europe, and finally found places that he felt like were oppressive enough. And when you watch the first opening moments in the colony, Jesus Christ, does it feel oppressively bleak. And like, yeah, you understand why these, like, these people are like, we need to get the fuck out of here. We need to go on to this stolen. Like, that's the thing. That's the magic for me that works in the first part of it, is that within 20 minutes, we get everything we need to know and why these kids are risking their lives and jail time to get certain things to get out of this hell loop that they're in, right? It's fucking amazing piece of, like, filmmaking, because it's so, Feeney cares about everything in the film. It's like it almost feels like old school Ridley. You know how, like, old school Ridley, I feel like post Gladiator, it didn't feel like Ridley cared enough. Like, you know how, like, meticulous, yeah, he was? Like I watched Gladiator 20 years on, and that fucking movie still rocks. There's no scenes. Like, everything feels real. Like, everything. Like, even to the tiniest of tinies. And, you know, because Feeney didn't get stars, or didn't get, like, he basically got a bunch of unknowns. And there is it's a small cast, right? Like, it's five people. Like, he was able to do all of the visuals that you would want him to do, and have the thing that takes the time, like model work and assisted CGI instead of full CGI, and legacy, like, makeup effects work. And, like, how nice was it to have a minimum of alien show up? Like there wasn't, like, full CGI crawling on the wall bullshit. It was just small moments.
I mean,
of the alien.
It's this, weirdly, because it takes place between both the films. It's this, yeah, middle ground between Alien and Aliens, between what Scott was doing, yes, which was basically this, like, haunted house in space thing. You can't see the ghost. That's scary. To Aliens, like, oh, when you find them, they're fucking they're cockroaches, man. They're, yep, everywhere. And so, like, to hit that middle ground, I it's a tough tightrope. Like, I don't know that you should even try to do it, but, no, like, for a large chunk of the movie, like, it's just the one alien.
Yes.
And then they get to a point where it's like, oh no, these things, like, it's a, you almost a throwaway line early on, and I'm like, huh, is that just because they were, like, trying to find a way to, like, cross the genetics? But Rook says something about, like, the alien, like, doesn't need food, doesn't need anything to survive.
No. Yeah.
And so, like, this station is decimated. Everybody is dead. Like, he shows you the one alien body, but that's the body that they took from space and you know, tore it apart, basically. Mm-hmm. You find out it was still alive. But,
yeah,
they dissected it. But clearly something else went on there. And so, like, in the back of my mind, I was like, I feel like there should be other aliens. Like, based on what he said, and based on the fact that, like, these people are gone. Like, the dead alien didn't kill them. What happened? And then they get to the bowels of the ship or whatever they're crossing. And it's like, oh, I recognize this. This is from Aliens. Fuck. Like, there's a farm of people here, you know? Like, it's, this is what happens. And, like, then at one point, like, they shine a light down this chasm, and it's just dozens of these fucking things crawling at them. And, like, you know, it's so well done that it's hard to believe that, like, to create something new and still pay, like, your respects to everything else, including the shit that a lot of fans are just like, not that one, not those, you know?
Yeah.
Like
really, like, not those. Like yeah. It is a, it's a magic trick. Like it really is. Like, it's so, I don't know. Like, it like, to me, it feel like it makes, like, this movie makes the Alien franchise exciting again.
Yeah.
Because it went back to basics. Like I know that sounds weird, but it's like, I, like, for the first time, I kind of want to see, like, I want to skip forward 2 years and see what Feige has in store for us with them going into the frontier, like, with her and Andy going into the frontier at the end. Like, I literally want to know what's going to happen. Like, I know that there's going to be something, because this is going to be it's already going to outgross it, like, what was expected a month ago. And I have a feeling, like, it's going to be like even that, like, what the predicted, like, the predictions are between 50 to 55 million, or maybe even be bigger, because everybody loves a horror movie, and this is definitely a horror movie. And then when word gets out, kids are like, oh shit, this is a good movie. Go see this. It's a horror movie.
I went to a 4 o'clock screening at an IMAX, and it wasn't packed, but there was a lot of fucking people there on a Thursday at 4 o'clock.
4 o'clock. Yep. Like, I did the same. I was at Adobe Cinema, 3 o'clock showing. It was the first, there was the first showing that they had. I would have gone to IMAX, but the IMAX didn't start till 7. And then, like, here's the funny thing. IMAX was sold out by the time it was there to a point to where there was, like, I'd have to be in, like, the first 10 rows. And when you're in an IMAX, you don't want the first 10 rows.
No.
So, and then, like, when I was leaving the theater at around 5 or 6, people were, like, it was packed. Like, people were going to see this movie. So, yeah, like, I mean, like I said, like, the biggest thing, like, the biggest compliment I can give it is that I really, after Prometheus, I was like, I don't give a shit about this. Alien Covenant? Oh, fucking please. Thank God it's going to be over with. This one? Yeah, I kind of want to see what happens now.
I mean, we're getting more Alien next year, not in the form of any kind of sequel to this film.
No.
Noah Hawley's Alien Earth, I guess, is the potential subtitle.
Yes.
And we already, next year.
And you and I both know, knowing Noah Hawley, what it's going to be. It's going to be no Alien, all back corridors. I guarantee you fucking, like, Fassbender might show up in it. Guy Pierce might show up in it. It'll be, like, Noah Hawley, go back to Fargo, please. I'm sorry, but I don't see you doing
anything. I mean, I'm excited to see what he can, like, what his idea is. Like, you know, it's Timothy Oliphant's in it, and, like,
yes,
I'll watch anything with Timothy Oliphant in it. And I, you know, his Legion show was so bizarre and well done.
It that, was like,
seeing him take on another, like, sci-fi-ish property. I would like to see what that, I'm excited to see what that is. I think it'll be more along the lines of Scott's first movie, where it's, like, limited alien visibility, you know, because like, how expensive would that be, you know, to create that on across 8 episodes or 10 or whatever it winds up being. But, like, I don't know.
The Alien franchise, like, despite Scott coming back and making two more movies that are in the franchise, but not really, like, it hasn't, like, it's been since Alien 3, which was, you know, kind of rough. And then Resurrection, I killed the franchise for decades.
Yes.
Like, it's not been since before Alien 3 came out that, like, I think that there was this kind of excitement about this property.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I guess Alien Predator, there was a little excitement from the, like, ooh, this could be fun. But yeah, then, you know, like, well, they wanted it to be PG-13. So, like, you know, and not that that's what killed it, because it really, making it R wouldn't have made that a good movie.
No, not at all. You know, like, it's weird because, like I said, like, over the years, I've had a chance to really think about this. And there's only three real Alien movies for me, including Alien 3, either in theatrical form or the extended cut, which is my preferred cut, which is not the director's cut, guys, because David Fincher will murder you if you call it his director's cut.
When your experience is so bad on a movie that the studio behind it comes to you and goes, hey, we're, you know, our bad, like, we're sorry, like, that was people before us, but would you like to assemble, like, what your cut would be out of what you have? Like, come back into the editing room, we'll give you, like, the money to finalize, you know, digital effects shots, all of this stuff, like, do you, like, would you like to do that? And he's just like, you can fuck right off. Like, you know, that was a bad time.
Yes. No, absolutely. Like, you know that that's a bad time. And then he, like, so, like, those three are the Alien films to me, Alien proper, right? And then everything else seems to be, for me, is like I said, like, it's like fan films, right? Like, they're made, like, even, like, I was so excited with Ridley coming back with Prometheus, right? Like the master is coming back to finish what, like, you know, what you think is, like, something. And then he gets lost in the woods with thinking that it's a Blade Runner movie with these fucking androids. Like, literally, like, these fucking androids. It's like, where's the working class, like, social, like, scary movie, how, like, scary. I mean, and like you said, there are a lot of really good sections of both of those movies. Like, I mean, love
there, there's not much more intense piece of cinema than in Prometheus, when it's in Prometheus, right? When she's doing the removal thing.
Yes. Or the snake thing. Do you remember the little weird snake proto alien?
Oh, yeah.
Like, where it cracks his arm and then it goes into his... Oh, fuck, dude. There's some very... Like, that self-surgery scene is fucking intense, dude.
Yeah.
Like, there are sections of it that are fucking amazing. But then it's just like, he thought it was a Blade Runner movie. Like, he literally thought it was a Blade Runner
movie. So, like, I understand getting, like, lost in the sauce with the space jockeys.
Yeah.
Because, like, it's such an unexplored thing. And, like, you can really, you could get into the mythology of all that. But, mm-hmm. like, he does, like, it's like at one point, like, between those two films, he's just like, yeah, remember Blade Runner? And, like, what were the androids all about? I'm like, dude, are you just trying, like, just tie them together. Tie them together. Like, find a way and tie them together. Like, because all you're making is a Blade Runner movie. So, and he didn't get to do the Blade Runner sequel. I think the lesson we're taking from all of this is Ridley Scott should not direct sequels to the movies he makes. So, that might not bode well for Gladiator 2.
Exactly. That's what I was going to say. I was like, that's fucking scary for a movie that, like, I'm really kind of looking forward to with Gladiator 2. Who knows? Maybe he learned a lesson and maybe there's no androids in there. You know, though Paul Mescal could be an alien or an android.
I want to talk about these... I want to talk about the ending a little bit. Okay. So the one thing in this movie that I continue to have a problem with the franchise as a whole across every movie except for Ridley Scott's first movie.
Mm-hmm.
They don't really respect the incubation time for the alien. But it's hard to like hold this movie down and say that like, hey, that's a flaw. Like there needed to be some a passage of time more than 5 minutes when almost every other film except for the first Alien film just really doesn't respect like the fact that like it took days.
Yeah.
At least a couple of days.
Like this one, it was like, and okay, so like there could be a cut scene where they explain that the incubation period has been increased because of all of their testing. Because remember, we do see a bunch of like the face huggers are no longer in the alien pod. They're in these weird like the cryo things, right?
Yeah.
Which could have increased it. But like literally it takes 20 minutes for the piece of shit dude's girlfriend to get infected and literally birth a chest burster.
Yeah.
Which is wild.
And like I said, it's hard to hold this movie down for that when it's just become a thing. Like, you know, but you can still do it 5 minutes later, but like you can imply a passage of time.
Yes.
But I get that they were working on a time clock, that which is also a thing that, like, how many fucking ticking clocks did this movie need, man? Like, he just kept adding to it.
Yes. They might as well have had a ticking clock, like, on the screen at a certain point.
Yes.
Because, like, it was a lot.
There's so many, like, there's the impact event of them hitting the rings. There's the fucking gravity event that's gonna happen. There's like all of these. I'm like, Jesus, dude, you just keep adding things to this. But it makes it really tense. And like in hindsight, it's like, it's maybe a bit too much, but it really works like in the movie. I think it works pretty well. I mentioned this before. I do think the last like alien human hybrid thing is a little bit of a bridge too far. A little bit.
Yeah.
Like I get you wanted like reading what I've read since watching the movie, he's not like he is a fan of all of them.
Yes. Like, and this
likes all the movies.
Yes. And this was definitely Resurrection. His ode to not just only Resurrection, but Prometheus with the giants. And also bringing in something new with the whole breastfeeding fucking wildness.
Yeah.
Like the whole mother thing, like really kind of like gets extrapolated like big time. Yeah.
This is the section where we realize that the director probably really needs some therapy. It's only for like 30 seconds, but I was like, oh, that's too much, too much. But I also don't think I get that they wanted to make it as absolutely grotesque and like not like normal, and not knocking the guy that they got to play the part, because I know he's a very large man. Who's done a lot of work like that. But
there's also Prometheus and Alien Covenant playing the jockey, because they're all the same. They're like, they all uniformly look the same. They're all the same guy, basically. They're whatever they're called, the pilots or whatever.
Yeah.
But I mean,
it looks so fucked up. Like just in a way, it very much like Alien Resurrection when you finally see the like hybrid thing that they do. It's like,
yes,
I can't stare at that, man. I mean, overall, just such a like, just good job. Like it was legitimately scary.
Yes. And that was the thing. Like, there were these things that he did, like these little pops that only horror directors would do, which is like the close-up of the impregnator coming out of people's mouths as they were fighting the,
oh my god, man,
like that was like, that's something we've not seen. It was absolutely fucking terrifying. You know, the weird rebreather, how quickly it was going, that fucking freaked me out. Like when the asshole's girlfriend gets the,
oh yeah,
the face hugger on her, I was like, and how it was like convulsing, basically, like the bladders. I was like, what the fuck is going on here? Which kind of made me visually think, oh, they've ramped up these face huggers to be super, super impregnators and start the process quickly.
He's also, while I was reading, he's also a huge fan of the video games based, yes, on the Alien films. And I think that weirdly comes through with a lot of the facehugger stuff, but specifically the scene where they have to cross the whatever, yes, that room
with all the facehuggers.
And yes,
get that little, like, my favorite part about that scene is that we get a little bit of lore and it's so quick, but that's the way I like my, like, I like adding on, don't have a whole conversation about it where he's like, you know, he's like, well, these things don't have any eyes, so it's like, we've assumed that they are both heat dependent and sound dependent.
Yeah.
And it's something that you never think about it, and they've never answered like practical questions, even though they've answered all they wanted to about the fucking space jockey. I don't give a shit. But tell me this kind of stuff, and that's interesting, right?
Yep.
That makes me feel like, oh, okay, that's interesting. That's very interesting.
Yeah. I mean, it just absolutely great performances. One specifically that won't get the fucking recognition he deserves, but, like, I mean, I know I won't see his, like, a quarter of the movies you see this year, but if I, yeah, see anybody give a performance as good as he does, as Andy, I will, Andy, be fucking surprised.
I don't, like, to be perfectly honest, like if they tried to push him, like if this is a huge success, which it looks like it's going to be, or a surprise hit, if they pushed him for a supporting actor role, that would not be out of the question because he's that fucking good. Like, he makes, like, he is both a part of the pack of androids that we've, like, you know, he's a part of the historic, like androids of Alien, right? Starting with Ian Holm, moving on to Lance Hendrickson, then going on to Fassbender. And I will say, of all of them, he, with Ian Holm, is like, he's like neck and neck. And the only reason why I would say not Ian Holm, or not more than Ian Holm, it's because Ian Holm has had, like, you know, has had 40 years plus years of that role. And we've seen him so much. I mean, the thing is that the guy is like 20 years old. Are you fucking kidding me? Like, that's just like, what? Wait, what? Are you kidding? Or I'm sorry, 30 years old. He's like barely turning 30. Are you fucking kidding me? Like, that's amazing. Like, to do that kind of work. Like, but then it reads to the Britishness of it all, right? Like, he's like, you know, Royal Shakespeare Company. So, like, you know, you throw a stick and there's talent there. But he's, I don't know, man. Like, it's just surprising how well he works in that movie. Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's just all around. It's fucking phenomenal. And, like, it's tracking for like $40 million US, mm-hmm, like 70 to 80 worldwide, which has got to be much better than expected. And also, for a movie that out of the gate, when Disney took over Fox, they were just like, well, it's going to go to Hulu.
Hulu,
like,
yeah.
That's where it's going to go. And, like, people beating the drum. I wished there had been enough people to do this for Prey.
Prey.
But, like, that was such and so early in the process that, mm-hmm, I kind of get it. But, like, I mean, even Ridley Scott himself was like, no, that, like, this needs, like, he, you know, you wouldn't expect him to, but he beat the drum for the movie, you know. Yeah. Like, there's a fun little anecdote that he told in an interview about seeing, I guess, an early cut of the movie and telling Alvarez that, like, he's like, I wrote some stuff down. Like, I don't want to give you notes on this movie, but if you want to read them, I'll give them to you. And yeah, he gives them to him, and that's probably not completely accurate how he tells it, but he gives him the notes, and he says, like, Betty Alvarez, like, reads the notes, walks away, like, kicks a door, like, punches a wall, and, like, walks in the hallway and screams or some shit, and then walks back in and goes, those are really good notes. Which I think is really funny. Hopefully he didn't hurt himself, but like, but the fact that, I mean, Ridley Scott's standing there going like, I don't want to give you notes. I wrote some stuff down, but I don't want to give these to you. But if you want to read them, you can see them. And then he said the one thing he did tell him was to keep the movie as short as possible.
As possible. Under two hours.
Yeah.
Which
I think is the lesson he learned with his two other Alien movies.
Yes, exactly. Well, I mean, the movie with credits is 1 hour and 59 minutes. So like, I clocked it. It's 1:50 without the credits. When it goes to credits, and then thankfully I checked, literally checked to make sure there was no post-credit sequence.
It would be such a bizarre thing to have a post-credit scene in an Alien movie.
Yeah, but you know how this works.
Yeah, I know.
You know what? Shout out to Dan Trachtenberg, because his Prey had to crawl before Thede's alien Romulus could run.
And it sucks that it happened that way.
Yes, but Prey 2, I've heard, has gone from Hulu to 20th Century Studios, and it's going to be a major release. And because because 20th Century and Disney understood that they fucked up big. Like, they really fucked up. Because, you know,
All Disney was thinking about was, it feels like all they were thinking about was like, oh, we get the X-Men back. Yep. The rest of that shit, it's just whatever, we'll figure out what to do with it. Weirdly enough, like, it was, they haven't had the success with Planet of the Apes that they had with Predator and Alien, but Marvel Comics was like, oh shit, so like, we can do stuff with these now? And like, their line of Predator books have been really good, pretty successful.
Okay, so can I ask a question? Are they as good? Like, so I love the Dark Horse run. Like, I'm sorry, like, I know they're cheese, but they're just, they were exactly what I wanted Predator to be, not Predator 2, even though I love Predator 2.
I think they're in line with a lot of that. I didn't read a lot of that stuff.
Oh, okay.
I read some of it. It was mostly, like, because the Dark, much like the, so the Predator run at Marvel is a series of miniseries, but that follows a storyline, and for me, at least, like, my experience with the Dark Horse Predator stuff was that a bunch of miniseries that don't all necessarily have anything to do with each other. So it was, if I'm intrigued by what the premise of that is, like, there's one where it's like Predator in the Civil War. Like, that's interesting.
Oh, I'll read that. Yeah.
Okay. You know,
like, kind of like what Trachtenberg is doing with his next movie, which is World War One. Yeah. The Predator is going to be in World War One. Okay, that's cool. Okay,
so,
I like that.
Well, that was a Dark Horse book. The Marvel stuff is all futuristic sci-fi stuff.
Aliens versus Predator stuff that we got from Dark Horse.
Yeah, so the Marvel books for Predator are largely based on, like, there's a character very early on whose family is killed by one of the Predators. She manages to survive, and then it becomes this series of, she's not in every one, she comes in and out, but like, she is tracking down Predators and killing them and taking their shit and making herself stronger. And like, she becomes one of, like,
basically becomes one of them, but like not recognized by them. They're just like, oh, we got to kill this chick. So, and then, you know, it brings in a lot of the lore. They do, there's one book specifically where they do like the movie where it's like all the people from the different time periods.
Yeah, Predators.
Yeah. They do something like that.
Okay.
But like, and then Marvel stepped in with the Alien franchise and was like, oh, we'll do something with this too. And like their Alien books were, I mean, really good. It got, it kind of captured the only thing it really didn't get heavy into was the Colonial Marines, which I feel like the Dark Horse stuff covered a lot of
Colonial. It really did. It was so heavy in that shit. So
which is Cameron's stuff. Like that's what he brings to all of that, is that military kind of mindset. And I get why people are into it, but like I was always way like this is more about the aliens. And so now Marvel's like branching a little further. Like they did the Predator versus Wolverine miniseries, which was really good. There's a Predator versus Black Panther series coming. Finished a one of the only What If series that doesn't contain a Marvel owned property. There's a couple of Conan What Ifs, but largely all What If stories are just Marvel properties because they want to be able to print them, or reprint them, you know, in collections and shit when they lose the rights. But they did What If Aliens, and it was co-written by Paul Reiser and his son. And it's about his character from Aliens. It's what if he had lived and like what happens after that. And it's really, really fun. Like, and that Paul Reiser got to like co-write the story with his kid. It's really interesting. And then the next Alien thing they're doing is Aliens versus the Avengers, written by Jonathan Hickman, which I'm really excited for. unfortunately, like the Marvel Universe has their own version of the aliens already, the Brood. So it's like we've kind of seen stories like this in the MCU before, but that it's the actual aliens, like it's intriguing enough. So Disney was ready to just kind of largely forget about these properties and treat them as like secondary. And now they're coming around and realizing they're like, oh, there are people who really like these things. And if we do it justice, like they'll show up. So like, you know, I don't think, Planet of the Apes movies are not theirs, right? Or are they?
No, they are. They are. Okay. They're Fox base. Yeah.
Okay. I don't know how successful that Planet of the Apes movie was this year.
It was very successful. It's actually on Hulu right now, but I'm waiting for my 4K to show up because I want to see it in the best possible format. And Hulu streaming is not the best possible format.
No.
It's not even close.
So, yeah, Marvel also did something with Planet of the Apes, more based on the old chronology, I think. Mm-hmm. I don't remember. I read, the first few issues, and it didn't capture, it didn't pull me in. So I was like, I was never the biggest Planet of the Apes guy. So, okay. But they did one miniseries. The fact that there wasn't a second speaks to how unsuccessful it was. Because if it made even a remotely large blip on the radar, immediately they would have been like, we need three more of these. It's nice that they're kind of coming around to like, oh shit, like, yeah, we got the X-Men, but like, also, we've got a lot of this other stuff that we really need to figure out how to like do stuff with.
How to monetize, and make successful, right?
You know, like Fox did own some interesting things. So
yes, they did. Yes, they did. And they still do. I mean, like there's so much that can be done. Like the one that I'm fearing the most, and it's not even sci-fi, and you probably already know where I'm going with it. Our homeboy Bruce Willis franchise.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, I don't want a prequel. I don't know if I want to Die Hard, but also we know it's coming. But it's just like in the matter of who are you going to get to do Die Hard? Like, and how are you going to do it? I don't want the John McClane year one, a cop. I don't want that, but I don't know if I want a rehash of one of the more perfect movies ever made. Though, like, it's like one of those things, right? Like, where do you start it? Like, you could start it in comics, but I mean, haven't they already done some of the stuff in comics?
Yeah. They did year one in the comics.
Oh, they did. I was just joking about that shit. Was it any good?
I have it. I didn't read it.
Okay.
So, okay. I actually have it because it was Ryan's, and
okay.
So I never got around to reading it. So
okay. Does he at least look like Bruce Willis, or is it like,
I mean, kind of, sorta.
Legal reasons.
Yeah.
Like, it's one of those things where I was thinking about that recently. Just randomly, I'm like, you know, I know who I'd want to direct the Die Hard movie. Like, if they were going to redo it, I'd want Radio Silence from Scream and Abigail, just because they're the smartest filmmakers right now working, smart enough to know to not take on the next Scream movies when two of your fucking leads leave. But also, it's like, there's this part of me that's like, I don't know. It's so weird. It's almost like it's like if you were to redo Speed, you don't redo Speed. You literally do a legacy sequel of Speed with Keanu Reeves, right? It's like there are certain roles that are so intrinsically tied to a person. And I feel like John McClane is both Bruce Willis and Bruce Willis is both John McClane. Like, right? Like, how do you do that? It's not like...
Yeah.
You know, it's not like we have a Bruce Willis right now. Like, we don't. Like, I don't. There's nobody I feel like is close to Bruce Willis. I mean, unless you have somebody that you can, like, come up with off the fly and go.
No, I mean, first of all, they already ran those movies into the ground. So just don't do it again. Like, just leave it alone. Like, I don't know. It's not to diminish it, but, like, other than name recognition, like, what the fuck did, like, Die Hard is just, it's, if it's not Bruce Willis, it'd be like making Beverly Hills Cop without Eddie Murphy. It's like, if it's not Eddie Murphy, who the fuck cares? Like, just make it another movie.
Exactly. It's almost like my question, and I hate posing this because it's like, you're putting it out into the ether, but it's like, what is Indiana Jones without Harrison Ford?
Yeah.
It's not like James Bond, where it's a utility thing where you can pull somebody out and push somebody back in. And to be perfectly honest, most people, like, there's a huge section of fandom that would tell you, that are James Bond fans, that James Bond ended with Sean Connery. That there's no other James Bond because he is him. Though I would make an argument against it, because Daniel Craig is fucking pretty fucking awesome for at least two of his movies. He has two great movies and then a bunch of subpar ones. But anywho,
I'm going to throw this out there, like, franchises that I would like to see them resurrect. Mm-hmm. One, Alien Nation. Like, it would be really fun to see them do something with that that's worthwhile.
Yes.
And two, even though I know they keep trying, but maybe they could keep trying without David Duchovny involved, the X-Files.
The X-Files? You know what? The X-Files is the one that I would be so... I would be very up for. I would be very, very up for. But it becomes this thing of, like, you have to toss everything out and you have to give it to Vince Gilligan. Like, even Chris Carter, I can't trust Chris Carter. But Vince Gilligan, you know, I mean, we all know he wrote the best episodes of X-Files anyways. which always fucking makes me feel weird that, what was he, like 25 years old, smoking pot, right? X-Files movie?
Yeah.
Jesus Dude. Christ. I mean,
we can wrap it up, but like, we're going to talk about Umbrella Academy hopefully next week. Adam hasn't watched it, so I don't want to ruin anything. I did watch all of it. I may or may not have a chance to rewatch it. You bringing that specifically how old he was writing those X-Files episodes. I caught a clip a week or two ago of, it was this old, like, it was one of those 80s, like Sally, Jesse Raphael, or one of those. And it was these mothers on there talking about how damaging comic books are. And they cut to this kid in the audience who, I swear to God, can't be older than 15, talking about he's writing comics for, he lists a publisher, which was one of those like 90s indie publishers that, like, I know the name and I can't remember who it is. And like, he goes off on this lady about, you know, comics can be for everyone. Like, comics can be for kids and adults, and like, it's on you to parent, and like, all this other shit. And it's fucking Gerard Way, man.
Are you fucking kidding me?
It's insane.
Oh man, I gotta find this clip. I will find this clip for myself just because, wow.
Like, and I'm like, does this guy go on to create like fucking award-winning, like brilliant comics, he's also the frontman of one of the most influential bands of the last fucking 15 years.
And you know what the funniest part is? Is that, man, a fucking, like, okay, we're going to close out with this, but this makes me feel useless in my life. This motherfucker is only a year older than me and 2 years older than you now. He was born in 77.
I know.
Jesus Christ. Are you fucking kidding me?
Yeah. Like, he's got something that, like, not to diminish us, but he's got something that we don't have. I don't know what it is. But, like, there's something there, you know?
It could be his first cousin once removed. And he's fucking Joe Rogan.
Oh.
Though it's kind of funny.
But
like,
when he was writing comments for a publisher at 15, Joe Rogan didn't have anything to do with that.
No. And also, like, let's be honest, like, Gerard's political stances, if you read are opposite. So antithetical of that fucking, like, that fucking dude who, you know, I don't even know, mushroom drinking, coffee thinking idiot, fucking elk meat dumbass. I'm sorry, don't at me, guys. I don't care. He's a moron along with all his sycophantic friends. But anywho, Jesus, Gerard Way. Yeah. But we will definitely be talking about that, because that is on my list to watch. It's very big, and maybe we'll get into
know he wrote Premium Rush.
Gerard Way run Premium Rush? You mean the bicycle movie?
Yeah, with Joseph Gordon-Levitt. Yeah, David Kep and Gerard Way.
Oh my goodness. That is hilarious. But we will get into Bad Monkey, or maybe we'll get into Bad Monkey 2. Maybe you watch the first two or three episodes that they have out right now.
That's my weekend. It's out now, right?
The first two episodes are up now. Third one. My weekend plans. Okay. I'm very excited for everybody to discover this one. I mean, like, it should be no surprise to anybody that I fucking loved it, because, you know, Bill Lawrence can literally do no wrong. Like, he literally is, he's got the Midas touch.
I feel bad that we just spent like an hour and change heaping a lot of praise on the alien Romulus and not like delving into the plot, but like, also the plot is pretty face forward, you know what I mean? Like, there's no like, oh, there's some deep shit here. It's like, oh no, the company was like making bioweapons and trying to like do the whole eternal life
we can live in space thing. Like, there's nothing like the first film. Like, there's nothing extra. Like, you can glom on to pieces of things and be like, I wonder what that means. But like, the film's not interested in telling that story. It's only, and like, for it to end as destitute as it, like, as the first movie, like,
yes,
I know part of me wants to be like, oh, like, using the get away from her, you bitch, and ending with Last Survivor, like, that's such, like, specific to those two movies, and maybe he should have done it differently, but the way he does it works so fucking well that, like, I have a hard time, like, being pissy about, like, using that little bit of, you know, oh, hey, remember these things? Yeah, it's a lot of fun, you know?
Yeah. No, but, absolutely. Absolutely. And it's like, and the story is, like you said, it's just a haunted house film.
Yeah.
Like, it's a ticking clock house, haunted house film.
Yeah, it's the one thing it has that, like, you haven't really seen in the other Alien movies, the bigger ones, more important ones, at least, is that ticking clock. And the fact that he just keeps doubling down on it. Like, by the time you get to the end, it's like, there's four ticking clocks here. So, yep. So, yeah, go check out everything else we're doing over at xwingfiles.com. Or you can check out our writing, more from me soon. It hasn't been a lot lately. Over at Adam's website.
Yes, themovieowl.com, where I am writing. Marie's back, and she's covering a film festival right now, so you can read that stuff. And then Logan is working on the final stretch of the first 50 of his column, Moving Pictures. So I'm excited to see where the last couple of them hit, and then we'll publish them out, and then you can read my stuff. You know, I'm always here.
That's, you got something.
That's the constant.
This week, I think you posted it this week or last week. But I was super jealous. I was like, ah, shit, I got to order that, man.
Which one?
I am such a fan of the OG Clash of the Titans. Like, and I have the, like, last special edition set that is either blue. I think it was a Blu-ray. Like, it came in, like, the book Blu-ray.
Yes.
Yeah, I have that one. And you got the 4K, and like, I love that fucking movie, man.
It's a good one, dude. It's a really good one. So yeah, no, absolutely. That was a treat to go into that. There's that review and so much more, guys. I like, the big one that's gonna be coming out next week for me is I got to review the Mexico trilogy, Robert Rodriguez's El Mariachi, Desperado, and Once Upon a Time in Mexico. And, man, those movies still bang. They're still great.
Ryan loved those movies, man, and I never got it. I watched every one of them, and I even saw the last one in the theater because he wanted to go see it so bad. I was like, yeah, I'll go. And, like, it was fun while I was watching it, but, like, ultimately I was just like, yeah, don't really do that much for me. Like, the action's fun, but, like, just, you know. But, yeah, he loved those movies, specifically the last two. He loved those.
Desperado is so great, man. It's literally, like, a John Woo movie set in Mexico. I mean, that's literally what it is. Like, slow motion, gunplay.
Never got it. Like, I want to like Robert Rodriguez, but, like, every time I get excited about something and then watch what it is, like, The Book of Boba Fett, I'm just, like, largely disappointed. I'm like, oh, forget it. I really don't really like this guy that much. So, but, I mean, not knocking him. Like, everybody that appreciates him, I'm glad for that. So, but he's just never been my bag. So, but I'm glad you got to see him. Ryan would have been fucking thrilled to talk about that shit.
Oh yeah, no, it's. Like, the work that they did on this box set is fucking amazing. So I'm very excited to talk about it. There's a bunch of more stuff that's coming. We'll be back next week talking Umbrella Academy, which I'm very excited about. I'm very excited to dive into. I wanted to be able to be what would you say? Like, I just wanted to be healthy when I watched it. I didn't want it to be like, it's already bad enough. It's the last season. I'm going to get morose about it. And I've heard that it's a morose season.
I was about to say, I don't know if you've read anything, but it's fucking divisive, man.
Yeah, that's what I've heard. And so like, I wanted to be as clear-headed as possible. Like I will say this much about Bad Monkey. It's one of those shows that you can watch, and even though bad shit happens, it's the Bill Lawrence touch where it's so...
Yeah.
It's so humane and so fun and so much, like, just heart in it that you can watch it at any, like, level of, like, discomfort, and you're gonna enjoy it. You know, and like I said, like Vince Vaughn is back in a big way. Like that was very surprising for me. Like he wrote Bill wrote Vince a part that is perfectly tailored for him, and in a way that like not even Wedding Crashers is as good as this. Because Wedding Crashers, he's kind of a skeevy asshole, and here he's like it's so weird to say this. Vince Vaughn is the heart and soul of the show and the moral compass, but he plays it so fucking good. It's like old school Vince Vaughn, where you're like almost like Bill Lawrence went, you know what we need to remind people of is that Vince Vaughn is kind of fucking likable and kind of like you know, kind of like deserves another shot at this, and in a completely different way, kind of like the way that he did with Sudeikis. I mean, Sudeikis was not doing anything at the time that Ted Lasso happened. So yeah, it's good shit. It's really good shit. And then not to get jealous for everybody, but I'm getting Shrinking screeners like next week, I think. So that should be fun, because that's coming back.
Yeah, I'm excited for that too. So yeah. Anyway, we will we'll see you guys next week.
See you guys next week. Rings and the Hobbit, number 4 Mario, number 5 Weird Al, number 6 Batman, number 7 Cal, number 8 Simpsons, number 9 TV, number 10 every single band that I stole all their MP3s, but before they all sold out, see it all together if you're with me now. Nerds.